Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. So when things fall apart, we put them back together. And that process creates an opportunity to ask, instead of putting it back the way it was, could we do it better? It's one of the faint silver linings of the catastrophe we're in. And that reimagining process is underway. Governor Cuomo is thinking that way. And earlier this month, he announced a collaboration with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to reimagine education. So let's look at that question of what to change, what to restore, and how to get there from here. We're joined by Noloue Rooks, professor of literature and of Africana studies, as well as the director of American studies at Cornell, and author of the book Cutting School, Privatization, Segregation, and the End of Public Education. And we're also joined by WNYC education reporter Jessica Gould, who will talk about some of the ideas that she heard from students about what they hope comes next in education, as well as what plans are underway. So hi, Jessica, and welcome back to WNYC, Professor Rooks.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
And listeners, we want to hear from you, not about how the ad hoc remote teaching is going for this segment. We'll get back to those segments. But what you want for the future, how would you reimagine education? Not just what Governor Cuomo or Bill Gates want, parents, students, teachers, administrators, what one thing would you like to see that panel focus on, or do you think could do the most to improve the way we teach our children? Call us at 646-435-7280. That's 646-435-7280. Parents, students, teachers, administrators, anyone else with a stake in education, what one thing would you like to see that panel focus on, or do you think could do the most to improve the way we teach our children if this really is an opportunity to reimagine education? 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280, or tweet your suggestion at Brian Lehrer. Now, Governor Cuomo set off some alarm bells in this regard when he said this.
You know, the old model of everybody goes and sits in a classroom and the teacher is in front of that classroom and teaches that class, and you do that all across the city, all across the state, all these buildings, all these physical classrooms. Why, with all the technology you have?
The head of the advisory panel he appointed walked that back and emphasized the need for face-to-face teaching, but it did raise the specter of Zoom classes forever and, frankly, laying off a lot of teachers, didn't it, Professor Rooks?
Yes, it really actually did. One of the things about cyber education, virtual schools, you know, New York has been in some ways insulated from the massive growth that we're seeing in other regions of the country until right now. So some of the conversations that we've seen take place elsewhere about, you know, it's just cheaper. You can have a lower overhead. You have less money you have to pay teachers. Teachers can teach, you know, 200 kids virtually. All of the talking points that you see in places like South Carolina, Florida, Philadelphia, Ohio, some other states, and towns that have really been grappling with this for a while, we're finally seeing it come here. What is disappointing about what we heard, at least initially from Governor Cuomo, is that he was representing those same talking points about the education of the future need not have face-to-face instruction, need not have buildings. You know, people can explore, technology can help us, without acknowledging any of the critiques, any of the issues that we know come along with that kind of thinking. kids who are overwhelmingly educated in a virtual environment, one that's designed to be virtual, that's very different from what's taken place in New York City, New York State, and in schools all over the country, where in the breach, in the midst of a crisis, people did what they could, teachers and administrators and parents who are bearing a big brunt of this, you know, did what they could to accommodate this thing that came out of nowhere. But even when, at K through 12 at least, even when online or virtual schools are deployed, are used well, regularly, intentionally, it really does harm students who are already struggling. It leaves behind segments of the population that most need education. So it was a little disappointing to hear the governor go back to like a moment almost before we had research about this and kind of go, hey, kids, this would be a great idea. Because we know what it looks like. We have research. We don't need a panel to study the future of education. There's enough already to start with to say we know what works well.
And I know that the collaboration with the Gates Foundation brings up the history of the foundation backing the Common Core curriculum and standards, for instance, that many people object to over its focus on test scores and some of its past efforts. we know from your book that you've made the intersection of business and education and segregation one of your main research efforts. But those efforts by Gates, as they see it, were aimed at making schools more attentive to lower-income kids of color at their core. I believe the idea, as the Gates Foundation sees it, has been that relying on test scores and a common curriculum could prevent warehousing of kids and force districts like New York City and many others to educate all students. So where do you come down on that today?
Yeah, no, well, absolutely. The thing with the rhetoric around the kinds of reforms that the Gates Foundation, since the mid-'80s, has really focused on, I mean, they have a pretty long track record of funding certain kinds of ideas, like you mentioned, the Common Core. In New York City, they were a big proponent for small schools, schools within schools, so that you're taking schools that have, you know, 1,000 people and breaking them into schools that share a building that have, like, say, 250 people each. The sad reality, though, is some years ago, about five, six years ago, the Gates Foundation actually admitted that they were leaving education, like leaving that terrain, leaving the battlefield of education, and going to focus much more on public health, because they said, you know, regrettably, I'm paraphrasing here, but the foundation said, you know, regrettably, we've tried a lot of different things and put a lot of money into this, and it's our best thinking, and we're just not moving the needle. It hasn't worked. So given that, if we're going to reimagine education, and given that the Gates Foundation itself, years ago, not just recently, you know, kind of said, maybe we don't have the silver bullet here. Maybe our money and our thinking, from what we can see empirically, the data that we have about our efforts, we have failed. And so to stop putting money into something that has failed, we're going to move, you know, over someplace else where we can think we can do a little good. So in that sense, it's a little perplexing that you would go back to an organization as opposed to talking with more community people, teachers, kids, you know, about what they would like to see. Something new, something fresh, something from the perspective of the people who are most impacted, as opposed to a foundation that has already left that behind.
Thank you for giving me a perfect segue then to bring in our reporter, Jessica Gould, who's been collecting just that, in her case, input from students, particularly about what is needed to reinvent education. Here is one small example.
Some people should do remote. I don't want a lot of people in the class. It shouldn't be more than 10 people in one class. So it should be like some kids will have remote learning 2 days, and some kids will have to go in for 3 days and then switch up, so it won't have a lot of people in school.
interesting, an idea for fall semester there in any case, Jessica. Jessica, you want to put that in context for us?
Sure. So that was Mamadou from the Bronx who answered our call out with our partners at Chalkbeat about what school should look like specifically this fall. We got a lot of similar sentiments about that, specifically the logistics of what the fall should look like. So, you know, staggered schedules, smaller classrooms. Students themselves are very concerned about the keeping the schools sanitary. They want to help their custodians with that. And a combination of remote learning in school because of the need to keep things small. More broadly, they talked about some of the lessons they feel have come out of this period. I heard about mental health being put at the forefront of education going into the new year, the new school year, particularly in the wake of coronavirus, but really hitting home how much students' personal lives affect their work and a greater recognition as a result of this on that. In addition, more flexibility for the obstacles students face in their home lives and also just different learning styles. So those were some of the broader themes that came out of our call out.
Let's see what some people are calling in with right now. Deborah in Rosendale, New York. You're on WNYC. Hi, Deborah. I think I know Rosendale. It's up near Accord and around there, kind of near New Paltz, yeah. Right?
Yes, I'm between New Paltz and Kingston. You're a national treasure, and I just wanted to say that before I said anything else.
Thank you.
I am a product of 70s progressive education, and we had something called values clarification, which was basically learning through thought experiments, ideas, reading different parts of literature about how you can be a better person, what is right, what is wrong, not in black and white, but in the sense of, well, what if you're in this really sticky situation? How would you figure out how to do that? And I think that, you know, math and all the, you know, tech stuff is really important, learning how to, I'm all in favor of all of that, but I think there's something that is getting lost as a young person, as a person, and how to think things through.
Mm-hmm.
And how to be who you are in what situation. And I think a lot of people get it at home, but not everybody does. And I don't think it's a matter of economics. I think it's a matter of, like, some people are more tuned to it than others. And I think if there was a small class, it could dovetail with a philosophy class to have values and what is right. Because looking at the carnage of where we are now, I think it's just really important to have that.
Deborah, thank you so much. I'm going to go right to another one. Michael in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael.
Hi, everybody. So I'm a longtime teacher, and even though I was a math teacher, I used to teach an elective course using Michael Pollan's book, The Omnivore's Dilemma, and then I would take the kids to the farmer's market. And I just think it's a great time to teach kids how to just grow their own food, even if it's just a windowsill garden, or to get involved with a community garden, because kids learn so much: biology, math, history, economics, politics. You can learn all of that through Pollan's book. And there's even a young person's guide to the book these days that they've developed. And I just think it helps kids realize that they can be self-sufficient, they can grow their own food, and it opens up whole worlds to them.
Michael, thank you so much. Let's do one more before we get some thoughts on this block from our guests. Chandra in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chandra. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hi, Brian. I want to say you're truly a blessing in our community at this moment, and we really do appreciate your voice. I would like to say that lower-income kids need to be more prepared for college because there's so much dropout in lower-income kids. And one way to address this would be more mentorship, like with the Bill Gates Foundation, even within the neighborhood. So when kids come to this crossroad, a mentor could really help navigate these kids' lives and let them to encourage them to stay on track.
Chandra, thank you so much. So Professor Rooks, what do you think about this first block of calls? Chandra's talking about more mentoring and involvement of parents with the Board of Ed and things like that, she mentioned to our screener. And the other two, I wonder if you react to things like values clarification and growing food as, oh, these are nicey-nice peripheral things. You know, what we need is a way to get the basics more equally taught through. But what do you think of the whole, because that's quite a diversity of things we just heard, even just from three callers.
Right. I think that what the callers were really pointing out is the desire many people have for a kind of coherence around what school is. It's a larger kind of conversation about is K through 12 just to prepare you for college? The whole point is to make sure that if you start in kindergarten, we are on track to make sure all kids, where in New York City you're talking about the vast majority being low-income and kids of color who are in the traditional public school. You know, is it just to teach them how to get jobs? Is it some basic literacy that they should have? Are there certain kinds of civics and values? And, you know, going back to the John Dewey, back to early conceptions of the first public school systems that were really about, we're going to teach you citizenship. We're going to teach you civics, like the reason we need a common school to make sure it's not just wealthy folks getting educated is because there's an idea of what American citizenship is, what it means to be an American, and we need to teach you some of that. So those are really long-standing kinds of debates that you see around education. What is it for? One thing to think about really in this moment, there's a writer named Arundhati Roy who's come up with this kind of construct. I promise not to turn into a professor here completely. But she's come up with this kind of construct that she calls the pandemic is a portal, right? Like, so it basically, what was before the pandemic is leading us through and to something else. And it's a question of what it's leading us to. Some of what we're already seeing that we're going to have to grapple with is we know that there's going to be a reduction in funding for traditional K through 12 or just for public education, traditional or no. We know that a lot of, from reading news reports, that quite a few wealthy New Yorkers and middle-class New Yorkers are figuring out how to take their kids out of the city. Like they're you know, a little, can't imagine what the other side of this portal is in terms of continuing to keep your middle-class white kids, you know, in this school system. Those things, those trends are going to lead to either something you could see as a complete calamity or an opportunity. And I think we should start thinking of this as an opportunity. If we're going to have less money, if we're going to have an outflow of certain kinds of kids, how do you then take seriously teaching how to teach the kids who will be left behind? Like, so instead of kind of going, oh, my God, people are leaving, what will happen? It will be carnage, you know. What opportunities on the other side of this pandemic portal, on the other side of the portal, are represented? And if we could get ahead of that, and so some of what your callers are saying, take into account what kinds of values do we want to teach? Mm-hmm. Do we want to think about skill-based education, skill-based learning in different ways? What is the role of vocational education in K through 12? I mean, I think there's a moment, again, for stakeholders to begin to ask some of those questions about what does this look like with what we know is coming and stop acting like we're going back to February of 20, right before
pre-COVID.
This happened. That somehow on the other side, pre-COVID, we're just going back to pre-COVID as if this was just a blip.
Let me take two more callers before we run out of time, and I'm going to have to ask them to keep this short because we are running out of time for this segment. But two people are calling in who actually teach education. They train the teachers and teach the future teachers. Renee in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Renee. I'm going to have to ask you to confine it to like a soundbite of about 30 seconds, but thank you for calling.
Thank you so much, Brian. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling both as a teacher educator and as a professor myself in university. I think what we need is an entirely new curriculum, a curriculum that looks at the future, at areas of possibility, what we're growing into. Such things as this pandemic are part of what was predicted long ago, but no one envisioned it. So I have taught courses on the human-machine connection, on media literacy, on what's called global citizenship, on looking at space travel and our roles as earthlings in a vast network, you know, if we're going beyond Earth.
And I'm going to leave it there for time, but that's a good tight list of specific suggestions for reinventing education. Thank you. And one more from a teacher of teachers, Michelle in East Northport. Hi, Michelle. You're on WNYC. We have 30 seconds for you.
Okay. Hi, Brian. Thanks. So my point is more about federal legislation, which impacts every single classroom in New York State. You know, ESSA, which is the new federal legislation for education, has more room for assessment type practices like portfolio assessments, yet New York State in its ESSA plan didn't take up that flexibility. So until we change our assessment practices, we're not going to see changes in curriculum, because let's be real, money is tied to assessment outcomes. If we don't have those outcomes, we're not changing our teaching practices, or we're not improving them at least.
Michelle, thank you very much. I'm going to leave it there. And Jessica Gould, I'm going to give you the last word, because as a WNYC education reporter and Gothamist education reporter, you've been out listening to students and teachers on how they want to reinvent education as Governor Cuomo partners with the Gates Foundation to come up with their blueprint for it. What would you say about what we've heard from our two blocks of callers here, and how it reflects what you're hearing from parents and teachers and students and the more grassroots views of how to reinvent education?
Well, I think what really resonates with me is this concern about deepening inequality in this moment, which the professor was speaking about. I've heard of parents who are interested in taking their kids out of the schools and having small homeschool collaboratives. And at the same time, I'm hearing the experts and the advocates and the students talk about really using this moment to address inequality, which has become even more clear as a result of the coronavirus. And so I really appreciated how Professor Rooks bridged those two things, talking about how let's focus on the students who are in the system and give them what they need. And I think that what's come out is a more holistic approach. School is not just about academic learning, but it's about, you know, living in community and mental health and broader wellness. So that's what I would say with my last few words.
WNYC's Jessica Gould and Cornell professor Noliwe Rooks, author of Cutting School, Privatization, Segregation, and the End of Public Education. Thank you both so much for helping to frame the kind of closer to the ground conversation that's really only just beginning as Governor Cuomo launches his Reinvent Education Commission. Thanks both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.